You're listening to the Known Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Known Legacy Ministries. For more information, go to knownlegacy.org. Now here's your hosts, Bill and Travis.
I don't feel like I've been in this seat in a long time.
It has been a while, man. It has been a while.
It's been a while. And lots happened.
Yeah, yeah. Christmas.
Christmas.
New Year's.
Last July 4th.
Last Easter, yeah. It feels like it's been a long time. I mean, lots happened. And, you know, you mentioned this morning, which kind of makes me sad. Toby Keith passed away this weekend.
I know. Tragic.
Sad.
It's going to happen to all of us, though.
It is.
It's a great reminder.
But, you know, it was interesting. We were talking about it a little before. What is your favorite Toby Keith song?
Easy. Red Solo Cup.
Red Solo Cup.
Red Solo Cup. And I'm not proud of this, but I am kind of proud of this. My kids at age 10 knew that song front to back. And
something to be excited about, something to be nervous about. Either way.
It was great. But the whole song. And what I appreciated about him as a songwriter was he was populist in his approach.
Yeah.
And he just kind of tagged into the heart of American kind of blue collar kind of life. And I always appreciate that about him, you know?
Yeah. What about you,
Kyle?
What about me?
Morning.
Yes. Should have been a cowboy.
Yeah.
Should have been a cowboy.
Because when basically the last time the Cowboys won the Super Bowl and they came out with that video afterwards,
they
had that song overlaying on it. So that song always stuck with me.
That was like 40, 50 years ago, right?
I think it was five? Before I was born.
I think it was 5 years old when the last time the Cowboys won the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Back in '06, right after World War I. You know,
that's a whole other episode.
That's another episode. For me, I think it wasn't really it wasn't like a song. I think it was right after 9/11. And he, like, came out with that album and, like, the whole, like, "Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at
that's
the
a great song.
That's a
Wait, what is that again, Bill? Say that one more time. I missed that.
You know,
I wasn't listening.
You only get one. You only get one. But I did like that. So, yeah, I was sad when I heard that he passed away. Sad stuff, sad days.
Yeah.
But it did make me think about concerts, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And I haven't been to a concert in so long. You know why?
Why?
I'm a poor pastor.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm there too. Well, and that's the problem. So I was at the coffee shop today, and they had Creed on. You know, when dreaming. You know, like that whole
What was that again?
Like
I missed that.
With like the mullet. I'm gonna only give you one of each of these. You got to pick up this gold when it gets thrown at you. But the mullet and the time and like you know like all that stuff and like it's just so good. And then I wanted to go to a Creed concert because they're back on tour.
Of course so. Yeah, why not?
And I was about to hit like to buy the tickets, and they weren't like the best tickets, but they weren't like the worst because you're like okay. I've arrived a little more, not really at all. But anyways, but I'm like, okay, I can have some expendable income. It was going to cost me $400 for two tickets.
Holy smokes. For Creed.
Yeah. And I was like, but my problem with that, I do like Creed and a lot. So I really thought about it. But then I was like, they should give some like special discount to people who saw them live when they first came out. Like the $20 discount. You know what I'm saying? I mean, does that make sense?
Oh, it makes sense. It never happened.
You know, okay, so I, you know, our guest today is Matt Hammett. Matt, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I would like you to speak in from the artist side. So let's say like you did like a Sanctus Real, you know, a comeback, you know, tour and thing, which I know they're still touring and you've been gracious. But like, I mean, why are they so expensive? Like, I'm not throwing this at you, but it's crazy. I was like, $400 bucks. I mean, thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Well, it's interesting. We always tried to make it affordable. That's the thing.
Yes, like, you did.
We were touring. We never wanted to make our tickets expensive. But I think literally it's just that it's how much can the market bear? How much will the market bear? Like any other business, right? It's like, hey, if we can sell an arena for $400 a seat, and we can, then why not, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I think it just literally comes down to the numbers for them, which sadly, I think that they can't understand how many fans they're actually shutting out because of that. So it is sad, but the people who deal with the numbers don't really care.
The other problem is when you lower the price of tickets and people like scalp them up.
That's true.
Anyway,
can you think about it maybe in the future like an old guy discount?
Okay.
Old guy discount. That's it. Just
seniors.
Yeah. If you're over 45, your tickets are now. If you've seen them live, tell us what your favorite concert was, and that's your discount promo.
And tickets come with orange juice and earplugs.
Orange juice. And the show's over by 7. And so it's great.
They need to do like a, like an insurance kind of model, like where everybody pays into insurance and there's only so many claims.
Yes.
Like, but it's like a club where all the senior citizens, right, like pay in like $5 a month to be part of the club.
And I would be down with that.
They can redeem their discounted ticket rates when they want to go to a show.
Creed, brought to you by AARP. Oh, good gracious. Matt, we're so glad to have you on today. Thank you so much for being here. Again, man, we're super excited. So thanks for being a part of this and kicking us back off as we've kind of worked through this little bit of pause. We've taken a little break. Wanted to come back in. But, man, over the last couple of months, there have been a few songs that have kind of jumped out to me. And one of them is your song, Church Hurt. And I love it. And it speaks volumes. So it really made me interested of, like, and, you know, again, being a pastor, I don't know if you guys, we don't know much about church hurt. No one's ever been hurt in the church.
Nope.
So it's very foreign. But the overall is I'd love to hear where that came from, the heart of the song and kind of, you know, the inspiration of it and kind of why you wrote it.
And I would love to see kind of what the reception has been to that song, because it's definitely not the typical, you know, Christian radio song that you're playing out there. So that's my angle.
So if you could share that, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, you know, it came from, I guess, the inspiration for the song, for doing the song is a little different than, I guess, some of the inspiration for the actual heart and lyric of the song itself. The inspiration for doing the song was me hearing so many people who just kept telling me, you know, how much hurt they had in the church. I kept encountering people who were walking away from the church, who had so much pain. And then it kind of just got me going, like, I should write about my own experience. And so my own experience was when I was young, my family went to a church since I was like, I mean, since I was born pretty much. And in fourth grade was the first time that I remember feeling what we would call church hurt. You know, my dad was part of the board. He, you know, we faithfully served the church. We were in there all the time. I mean, anytime the church doors were open, we were there serving as a family. And my dad was part of a group of elders in the church who questioned some decisions that were being made and were kind of pushed out of the church because things were being exposed that leadership didn't want to be exposed. And so we were kind of asked to leave, in essence. And so I remember, really? Like, my parents telling me we were never going back to this church that was the only thing I'd ever known. And it was such a deeply painful experience for me. And not just for me, but to watch my parents be separated from community of people that they had loved for so long and served. And so, you know, that was kind of the first part. Then we went to another church where my parents stayed at that church, remained faithful through multiple leadership splits or church splits and leadership issues. And so, you know, for us, it was just really painful. But my parents always taught me that we serve God and not people. And they always just kept their eyes on God. They kept their eyes on each other. They kept their eyes on the work that was right before them that they were called to do, and that they lived that way. And I think when I was confronted with the reality that so many people I knew were either leaving church or deconstructing because of pain that they had experienced behind church walls, I felt like, okay, how can I infuse this powerful lesson my parents have taught me into a song, starting with empathy? The empathy piece is, hey, I've been there, right? Like, I still talk about it. I still feel it. Yeah. I understand. Secondly, being the question, where have I put my faith, in God or in people? And, you know, most importantly, Jesus was the very first to feel church hurt when he was betrayed. And so I'm like, okay, Jesus understands our faith is in God and not people. And how could I encourage people with kind of this progression that starts with empathy and ends with truth? And so, you know, the heart of the song is really felt by me, like, because I've felt it, but it's also our feelings only go so far, right? We have to confront our feelings with the truth. And so that was my hope in this song, was to make something really guttural, but also really truthful.
No, I love it. I mean, I go for it.
Yeah. So how has it been received? Has it been embraced? Or our church is like, yes, this is what we need. Or is it like, no, we'd rather have another worship song pushed out by you, Matt?
Actually, my home church in Toledo, Ohio, you know, I live in Nashville now, but when I go up there and visit, that's my home church still. And that was the church I actually grew up at post kind of that initial church hurt experience. The church that we experienced multiple splits in, that my parents have remained faithful to this day. They actually invited me to speak on a Sunday morning, all three services, to give them a message on church hurt, which I thought was incredible. I mean, that was such a beautiful opportunity to take the platform and speak to people, because they had seen an influx of people from other churches who've been hurt, and they wanted to speak to forgiveness and speak to the process of healing, and speak to the process that the truth that no church is perfect.
Right.
So it's been embraced by some people in that way. I think actually way more pastors have embraced it than I've thought, because obviously we know that pastors are just as hurt as people in the church.
Absolutely.
Radio, man, it was too big of a weight for them to carry. I think there were a lot of stations that wanted to play it, but felt a weight of responsibility that if we open this conversation, we have to finish it or carry it on. And I just don't think they felt that they were just able to do that. And I totally get it. You know, it's like, how do we open that conversation with the listener or their families? But then there were like five or six stations that are actually have pretty big audiences that did pick it up and play it. And like Chattanooga, J103, that was actually their highest testing song on the radio when they played.
Nice.
Wow.
So I would say there's evidence that people want to hear it and people resonate with it. But I also agree it's not something that you can just play on recurrent and everybody's going to like, oh, church hurts back on the radio. Sing along, kids.
But I think it speaks to the bigger paradigm of honesty and authenticity.
Yes.
Like there's this moment of like, hey, we're all messed up. I mean, I'm finding that more of every time that I read the scripture, my lens right now is like, wow, everyone's broken all the time. And I'm like, why did you not just start with Earth 2.0 and just kind of make us robots? But I just see this. But it's interesting, because the more I have conversations with people, it really is perspectives more than it is this one is intended to do evil. It's like they just are seeing it from different platform. Do you find that same basis, or what are you hearing from people that have come and talked to you about that?
Yeah. Ask it one more time.
It's not like, okay, Tom, this guy had some giant desire to want to take the church down. He just had a different perspective than Susie, who was hurt this way, and instead of trying to work together, they're like, no, I'm right. No, I'm right. Are you finding that too? Or what are you finding?
I'm finding most people's stories that come, and I get a lot of them, are, I think, just lack of willingness to openly communicate with each other and work things out. You know, like it is, I think it's like differing perspectives. Like you're saying, like, you know, people think or feel this way, like you said, like Tom or Susie or whoever.
Then
this other group feels a different way. And it's almost like politics. Like instead of getting together in the middle of the aisle to work it out, they just like keep distancing themselves from each other and getting angrier and angrier, you know? And then there's obviously the stories I get of abuse from both sides, pastors feeling abused. People in the church who have no respect for them being people and having lives, no empathy or grace for the pastor's journey in terms of them just finding their own way in the pulpit and being a human.
Yep.
And then same the other way around, you know, leadership who maybe has abused or manipulated, and we all know those stories are real, you know. It comes down to the fact that somebody is literally putting their faith in a person, in you, and not in God, and that's just the nuts and bolts of it is what I see.
Yeah, no, I love what you're kind of that whole idea, the people side of it, dealing with people and just the messiness of it all. Yeah. I mean, you know, go for it.
I just as you're talking, the litany of individuals that have allowed their view of God be tainted. How does Duke always say it? Don't let people mess you up about God. Let God straighten you out about people.
Yeah, that's it.
And I think that's that's where we've missed that a little bit our church. And the hurt goes both directions. And I think for me, the thing that keeps coming up is we love hurting each other over personal opinion stuff. It's not even doctrine stuff anymore. Yep. It's just personal opinion stuff.
Yeah.
And I wish that we were able to in the church say, hey, We have core doctrines that we hold in a tight fist, absolutely, and we don't let go of that stuff. But the other things we're gonna argue about, we're gonna have some conflict about, but we're still gonna love each other in the midst of the conflict.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're still going to commit to each other to be on the journey long enough to sort it out. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when Jesus turned to Peter, who had been on that journey for a long time with him, and basically said, "Hey, get behind me, Satan." We kind of read that line and we're like, "Wow, that was a pretty intense line." Could you imagine Peter sitting there and like that's a curse on him?
Yeah.
Like the hurt that came from that, right? And then you see a few chapters later, Peter all of a sudden denying Jesus and the hurt that comes from that. And the important conclusion of that is seeking reconciliation and forgiveness. And it's like because we're such a consumeristic culture, we don't seek reconciliation, which is truly the gospel on display, reconciliation. We go for comfort. And so I'm uncomfortable here. They're disagreeing with my opinion. And I'm not saying this is your situation, Matt, with you and your family. Ethical things that are happening there, you got to call it out. And if they don't respond to it, you got to shake the dust off your feet and say, this is no longer a place of peace. This is engaging in the evil of the world, not pursuing the posture of Christ in that.
Yeah.
But we just don't engage in that process of reconciliation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we don't do it in our marriages. We don't do it in our churches. We don't do it in our culture. We just, I don't like it here. I'm going to go to a different restaurant. I don't like it here. I'm going to turn off the movie and do something else on Netflix.
Very consumeristic, yeah.
Very consumeristic. And I think that's feeding into this church hurt that so many people have had so long ago.
Yeah.
And they're still holding it and having it never been reconciled with forgiveness and with grace and with that deep love and appreciation for each other. Does that make sense? Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense. In fact, I'm kind of intrigued. You said you spoke at the church in Toledo, and I was like, what was kind of your encouragement or what was your wisdom that you shared with them during those sentences? Cause I feel like this is a big thing and there's not a silver bullet. It's not like, and now we do this. But what did you share? What kind of wisdom did you share when you talked on that Sunday?
Yeah. So basically, so I started out by sharing a little bit of my story, you know, with the church, and talked a little bit about every community, you know, that holds these stories of hurt, you know, that we're not alone, you know, and talked about some of the stuff that's going on in culture too, in terms of like the Mars Hill podcast, the Hillsong podcast, Shiny Happy People, you know, all these documentaries about deconstruction that we see. And like, I feel like culturally, we keep seeing these stories that leave us kind of in the rubble, just looking at the mess going like, okay, well, that's pretty horrible. So now what?
Yeah,
you know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think to me it was the now what, you know, what are we learning from Jesus? And, you know, John 21, you know, where Jesus says to Simon Peter, you know, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord. You know that I love you. Ask them over and over again. Then feed my lambs and take care of my sheep. It's like the call of Jesus is to take care of the church. That was the call to Peter. I know that was his call to Peter personally to actually build the church, but I think this call to all of it. If you love me, then build my church, feed my people. And I think that we all have to decide, like, if we love Jesus, will we abandon his people or will we feed his people?
Yeah.
And at some point you have to abandon yourself in a way. I also, though, agree with, you know, what was said earlier, which is sometimes you got to see the difference between a simple disagreement. And then there's foolish people. I just talked to my pastor about this actually recently. There's foolish people, and there are also evil people.
Yes.
That are in the church.
Wolves in sheep clothing, man.
Yeah. So, like, you do have to, at some point, come to a place where you go, hey, I'm going to serve the church because I love Jesus, regardless of how I feel. And I am going to take the steps to heal because I love his church, right? So not just overlook it,
yeah,
but actually heal and do the work of healing because I love him, because I love people, so I can continue to serve. But also along the way, look at people who are foolish or evil and causing problems and say, I'm not going to have anything to do with that.
Mm.
And so I do think there's two different categories in which we proceed to find healing. And part of that can be just cutting off certain relationships that are not healthy.
Absolutely. And you see that with Paul and so many of his writings in the early church.
Yep.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He in Timothy, 2 Timothy, he warns, he's like, hey, warn someone who's grumbling once. And if they continue to grumble, do it again. But if they continue to grumble again, cast them out. And I think it's this, do we have a posture of confrontation in the sense of, am I willing to receive criticism? Let's do criticism instead of confrontation. Am I willing to receive that, process through that with the lens of Christ, saying, where might I be wrong in the situation?
Yeah.
Versus a posture of arrogance, which is like, no, I've thought about it. I'm right. You're wrong. You know, and it's just, it's messy. It's the reality that relationships are messy. Inside the church, they're messy. Outside the church, they're messy. The thing that makes the church relationships different should be the foundation of, we seek forgiveness in all the wrongs that we're doing.
Yeah.
Because Christ has forgiven me, so I'm going to seek forgiveness with you. We may have a difference of opinion, but I'm going to seek forgiveness from you because I realize that this dance takes two people, and so we're both dancing. So let's figure out how to dance in such a way that Christ leads, not me in my opinion and not you in your opinion, but we are both following Christ.
And that was really the call to action, you know, when I spoke at Calvary, which was the church was, you know, how do we engage the path of healing and reconciliation so that we can be healthy? Because I feel like more than ever, and also part of the call was the fact that, like, more than ever, the world needs the church, or as much as ever. I mean, the world needs us to be strong. Yeah. You know, part of my message is that the church is the greatest force of good in the world. We feed more people. We free more slaves.
Yeah.
You know, we,
Bride of Christ,
we do.
Baby.
Yeah. Bride of Christ is out there in the world, loving people who nobody else loves and solving problems that nobody else can solve. And so the world needs us to be strong and healthy and whole. And we can't do that if we're not addressing this issue. I feel like it's so important to address this issue.
So let me ask this question, Matt. Having kind of sat with this at a level that I don't think many people have, if you were to have a conversation with a guy at a cigar shop or a coffee shop or somewhere, and they were dealing with church hurt, that something that had happened maybe years ago or recently, what would be some words of wisdom? What would be some encouragement that you would have for them as they begin to maybe finally engage in that process of reconciliation, that journey of restoration of a broken relationship?
Yeah,
man. I think something you said earlier is just really important about how it takes two. I think so many people are focused outwardly on what happened to them. And it's really the most difficult thing to have to ask yourself some really hard and difficult questions about what is my responsibility in the journey forward for me. That is the most important question we can ask, because we've already spent so much time saying, what's their responsibility? What is it that they did that hurt me? We're dwelling on that constantly. Like, if we don't come to a place where we're willing to, like, look inward or look in the mirror and say, what part of my response to this contributed to my pain or has not allowed me to heal or someone else to heal? I think until we do that, we're in big trouble. There's no way forward.
It's funny. I'm noticing this pattern as we talk. It seems like it was like, to have a heart of restoration first and foremost. Again, I think that's how we separate the wolves from the sheep. Do you truly want to restore, or are you just here for your own selfish device? This whole idea of, man, of us having this heart to go, is my goal restoration?
Right.
Is my goal, I want to see this, or is my goal, I need you to hear what I'm trying to say and take it or leave it? I think that's a big thing, that you can find the church where these people are hurt and it's like, no, I just need you to see what I'm saying. Nah, I don't really care what you're saying.
Right.
But instead of going, I need to have a heart to listen. What are you trying to do? And then finally, like, but I do know that I took some blame. Like, this is part of this is my fault too. You lay out your thing on the table. I'll lay out, you know, I lay out my heart and my issues. You do the same. And then we seek to either go, can we work this together, or can we peaceably move forward?
Yeah. Empathy. Yeah. Empathy is the ability to understand to some degree where the other person might be coming from.
Yeah.
And why they're coming the direction that they are. That doesn't mean that you always forgive it. I mean, again, Paul was bold, man. He went into some of the churches and he wrote letters. He's like, you got to kick these people out.
Yeah.
Because their sin is such that it's actually destroying families as they're trying to follow Christ.
Yeah.
So you need to kick them out or keep them on the edges. Treat them as if they are a stranger, right?
Yeah.
Or treat them as one who no longer believes. But you do have to have that. And that's why I think the ethical things are so important. I mean, the things that take down most leaders within the church are pride, our sexual infidelity, our embezzlement of funds and resources.
Greed,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's
why
when Paul's writing to Timothy and Titus, these young pastors within the church, he says, hey, if you want to know who you're looking for the leaders, make sure they're mature in their faith.
Yeah.
That they understand this reconciliation process, that they're not new to this. They may have all the understanding, but if they haven't journeyed through the difficulty and the mess of community,
mm-hmm.
then be wary of that. And then make sure you look for someone who's the husband of one wife.
Yeah.
Someone who's not given over to drunkenness. Someone who is not motivated by money. You know, that doesn't mean that you have a life of poverty as a church worker, but make sure that they have a different perspective about money where they're not trying to make the money. They understand the money is actually God's and we are simply vessels that use it for him and his glory.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think that's it. It's this heart to restore, because the world really does need us.
To fight for it.
Because we forgot the bigger picture. That man, this is about the hope of Jesus. This is the only hope in the world. And so with that, we have this opportunity to stop and say, God, this bigger picture is we're working together to bring hope to hopeless people. Can we see that? You know,
so funny how God will set things up. We were getting going and, you know, we kind of want to start at 10 o'clock. You guys don't care when you're listening to this. But,
yeah.
But all of a sudden, Bill, in the middle of this, and he picks up his coffee and it starts to spill. And then he just pours over the whole table,
I fumbled everything. Beyond anything.
And he was so like, oh, I'm so sorry. And Kyle and I, the producer, Kyle, we're like, dude, it's all good. Because Kyle and I, with empathy, were like, that could have been us. Number two. We've done that before. And number three, why cry over the spilled coffee? Let's just get after it.
Let's make it happen. Then they just started cleaning it up.
Yeah.
But I think that's where, to kind of wrap back in, I do feel like we have the only hope in the world. And so with that, we have an opportunity to bring this, to either look at the picture and go, do I want to deal with what hurts me more than me looking at what the future has to say? So, no, I mean, to bringing that hope to hopeless people. So anyways, Matt, man, any last thoughts as we're kind of rolling to the end of this?
Man, gosh, there could be so many things to say. Life is hard.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend yesterday who I saw, we used to be in a small group with, and we were, you know, we used to vacation together and do all the things together, and nothing is out of joint there in terms of relationship. It was just life kind of happened, right? And we're good.
Yeah.
But we were, I saw, you know, them and we were just like, man, life is so much harder than we expected. And the older we get, we thought it would get easier. And it's really still just a series of finding the joy in the midst of the next challenge. And I think that, you know, life's too, way, way too short and way, way too important to not take the challenges head on and get back to the joy of living, right?
or even be
willing to see the joy and find the reward in every challenge. And part of that is taking it on. And I just, anybody out there, I would just encourage them who's kind of just sitting and stewing in church hurt. Victimization is a really good feeling because it gives you somebody to blame for pretty much everything in your life.
And don't be the victim.
And it feels good, man, to be the one who is wronged, you know, even if it's just in your heart, opinion, or whatever your side is, or maybe you really were wronged. But it's like, it's time to heal. It's time to move forward. It's time to find the joy again. It's time to be part of the whole church that is serving the world, because the world needs us. And you're an important part of the church.
Love it. I love it, dude. Called. I love it. Well, man, so grateful to have you on today, man. And check it. We will put a link for Matt's song, Church Hurt, in this.
Yes, absolutely.
Matt, we love, always love having you on the podcast. You know, even when I start out not being all right, I'm all right.
Hey, and when you're in Dallas, Fort Worth area, man, we'd love to treat you to a meal, you and
yes,
your crew.
Yes, absolutely. So we are glad.
Yeah,
I know.
Awesome.
I know Matt's got some dates. Check out his website, matthammett.com, right?
Yep.
Did I hit that right? Awesome.
It.
And Matt, thank you so much again, man. We
God
are so great to have you on. And yeah, we'll check out his stuff. Man, have a great day. Family, God bless. We're grateful for you.
God bless.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Known Legacy Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. So email us your questions or comments to info@knownlegacy.org.